Our topic today is the religious philosophy of William James. William James was born in 1842 in New York City, the first son of idiosyncratic religious visionary Henry James. He was also older brother to the other better known Henry James, the famous writer. The early education of both James brothers included school in New York, and then, while teenagers, schools and tutors in several cities in Europe. After earning his MD from Harvard Medical School in 1869, William James became an instructor of anatomy and physiology just 4 years later. In 1875, he began teaching psychology at Harvard. And in 1879, he began teaching philosophy. In his groundbreaking Principles of Psychology, published in 1890, he emphasized the need to make psychology a physiologically based, experimental, scientific discipline, distinct from the abstract philosophical speculations which had dominated it up to then. At the same time, it was his views on philosophical issues that aroused wider interest. James died in 1910. William James and Charles Saunders Peirce are generally regarded as the co-originators of the only original school of American philosophy, pragmatism. This American school of philosophy called pragmatism takes its name from the Greek word pragma, which means act or deed. Its basic principle is that a true belief is one that you can act on. You can trust it to bring about what you expected. In the world of science, a theory successfully predicts what will happen as more experiments are conducted, and what will be found as more observations are made is called a true theory. And one that fails to do this is false. A true idea is one that is useful, that works. But then one can ask, useful to whom? And it is in answering that question that William James offers a very different answer from that given by Peirce and later by John Dewey. Charles Saunders Peirce and John Dewey were both what may be called public pragmatists, who focused on the public or social nature of knowledge. For them, truth is what is useful to the human community as a whole, and thus is closely tied to what has been established scientifically. James, on the other hand, put forth an individualistic or private pragmatism. For him, truth was what was useful to me. James would readily admit that some other view could be useful to you. There was no need that we should all agree on the issue of what is true. Thus, James's view could have been promoted under the slogan, "To each his own." And for James, this individualism was especially important in the areas of religion and philosophy. In science, where experimentation could be done to test the theories being advanced, any rational person would be stupid not to accept the theories supported by the evidence. But the situation was totally different when attention was focused on philosophical and religious issues beyond what could be established scientifically. In some areas where there were no scientific experiments which could definitively determine what was true or false, then different people would be free to find one or another theory to their liking on the basis of non-rational, that is, non-experimental, verifiable bases. This point of view was evident in one of James's earliest philosophical publications, The Dilemma of Determinism, published in 1884. There he makes the point that no experiment can tell us whether determinism is true or not. That is, whether things could turn out differently from the way they actually do. Experiments can only reveal actualities. That is, what does in fact happen. But they can't reveal possibilities. That is, what might happen. Scientifically predisposed persons, much in love with the ordered world of laws of nature, might feel that nothing could happen but what does happen. These tough-minded people, as James calls them, are temperamentally at ease with an ordered world where everything must be the way it is. But the thing to note is that their belief is based on a feeling rather than on some facts about which everyone must agree. In fact, James concentrated not so much on their love of order, but rather their feeling of fear, on how uneasy they would feel if the world was not so neatly organized, if it didn't unwaveringly follow the laws of nature. These determinists would be very uncomfortable if the world were so chaotic that some things could happen that would be inexplicable and, in principle, unpredictable. They are comfortable with order. It was only years later, in 1934, that the scientific study of the behavior of subatomic particles led to the adoption of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, the notion that one could not simultaneously know both the exact location and the exact momentum of a tiny particle, and thus no one could predict its future course. The great Albert Einstein could not accept that viewpoint and continued to insist that, quote, God doesn't play dice, unquote. That is, Einstein continued to be a determinist, convinced that nature had to be completely law-governed and that the uncertainty principle applied only to what humans can know about the subatomic particles and not about nature itself. So there's still that disagreement about empirically, is everything determined or do some things happen that cannot be predicted, that don't happen in accord with the laws of nature? James argued that if the world was strictly governed by laws of nature, as the determinists believe it was, that would imply that nothing, including my own actions, could be other than the way it is. That would mean that the notion of moral responsibility would need to be abandoned, and that we would need to look at ourselves as robots. James said that tender-minded persons like himself preferred an indeterministic view of the universe that would allow moral freedom and preferred that to a deterministic one that assumed that nothing could be other than it is. He admitted that his view was based on the feeling of hope that this indeterministic view supported rather than any kind of objective evidence. But he noted the determinists were also adopting their view on the basis of feelings rather than any kind of objective evidence. It's just the nature of a metaphysical question like determinism versus indeterminism that you're not going to resolve it by any kind of scientific experiment. Furthermore, he said, if that deterministic view satisfied their psychological needs for stability and predictability, then it was true for them. But they could not insist that it was true for him. It was not useful to him to believe that the future was closed to alternative possibilities. Believing in an open future which allowed for moral responsibility, was what was useful to him, what satisfied his psychological needs. Therefore, it was true for him. He also thought that once people saw what was at issue in this question, most of them would agree with him that indeterminism rather than determinism is true. William James disliked playing verbal games, and thus he delightfully always states the views of his opponents in the most attractive way, while choosing the least attractive terminology for his own views. For example, on the determinism issue I have just summarized, he refrained from saying that he was arguing for freedom. He said that he was arguing for chance, for lack of order. When it comes to describing his own position on the key issues of religion, he says that he is a crass supernaturalist, as opposed to the refined supernaturalism adopted by his opponents. A refined supernaturalist is a sophisticated thinker who takes the findings of science seriously, who admits that there are no miracles and no personal immortality after death. Even if the refined supernaturalist believes in God, like a deist or absolute idealist would, it is the kind of God who, in James's memorable words, does only a wholesale, not a retail business. That is, it is a God who is concerned about running the world in general, but who is not much concerned about my particular problems and my personal prayers for help in dealing with dire situations. How much psychological help is such a remote God in hopeless situations? One might as well be an atheist, James observed. If a religion is to be good for anything, said James, it must meet the needs of the believer. Religion must provide hope in otherwise hopeless situations, and companionship when one is lonely, and moral support in times of temptation, and serenity in times of trouble. In line with this thought, and in another of James' unforgettable pithy statements, he unabashedly says, "Religion, in short, is a monumental chapter in the history of human egotism." He observes, "The pivot round which the religious life revolves is the interest of the individual in his private personal destiny. Truth in religion is what is useful to you." James often describes his thought as pluralistic rather than monistic. His focus is usually on his own indeterministic metaphysical view, which opposes everything in its place deterministic universe of the absolute idealist, who held sway in his day. But his view is also pluralistic in another sense, in its rejection of the one-size-fits-all view of religion and philosophy. What is true for James is what is useful to the individual. This does not need to be the same for all individuals. In science, where there is objective evidence, it is ridiculous to try to believe something other than what the evidence supports. But in the questions of metaphysics and religion, where there's no objective evidence, so people are freer to search for and find the beliefs which are useful to them individually. Scientific experimentation is not able to decide the issue between determinism and indeterminism. Neither can it decide the issue between a naturalism that denies a personal God and personal immortality on the one hand, and a supernaturalism that affirms the existence of a God who cares for individuals and the continuing existence of individuals after death on the other. Such openness to alternative ideas obviously makes James's ideas about religious viewpoints attractive to Unitarian Universalists, with their rejection of creeds, with ideas that all members of the religious community must accept. James has many other interesting ideas about religion. He argues for belief in a finite or limited God on grounds that an infinite or omnipotent God has everything in his control. In that case, just as in a deterministic world, we would not be truly free, which we must be in order to be morally responsible. If God controls everything, what could we possibly do? At the same time, in order to have hope in hopeless situations, we need to believe in providence, that in the end, God and the values of love and justice associated with that superior being will ultimately prevail. To show how believing in a finite God need not mean abandoning the idea of providence, James provides the analogy of the master chess player. This master player need not control everything that happens on the chessboard. He can allow even his opponents to move as they want. Nevertheless, we can be confident that in the end, the master chess player will win. Furthermore, this confidence, this faith that God will win in the end, even provides something that atheists can never enjoy, namely moral holidays. That is, believers can try to do what is right and good most of the time, but they need not fear that at a moment of leisure on their part, that this moment of leisure will lead to a moral disaster for the world as a whole. In the end, God and good are bound to prevail. But the atheist can never justify even a moment of relaxation, since that moment of repose in a world without providence could be just what the forces of evil need to prevail. Maybe there could be a nuclear war that would destroy the earth, or irreversible damage to the environment, things that might have been prevented with a bit more effort. You just can't let up if you don't have this faith that good will prevail in the end. James also addressed the belief in a life after death. He argued that most of us do not need assurance that we personally will go on existing forever. His view is that if we know that our ideals are to be cared for in eternity, he does not understand why we might not be willing to resign their care to others. We don't have to be involved. At the same time, he understands the desire to be personally present to witness the ultimate victory of good over evil. He says that in the conflict between, quote, these two impulses, both of them so vague yet both so noble, unquote, he does not know how to decide between them. He concludes that the issue of everlasting life is a case for facts to determine. James himself was a great believer in psychic research about the possibility of life after death. But he believed that so far, no convincing evidence had been uncovered. Furthermore, even if there were some evidence for some continuation of the individual after death, that would not show that such life after death would go on forever, even if you had some kind of psychic correspondence with people who have died, it doesn't show that they would go on forever. At the same time, if we follow the general view of James in matters of religious belief, this absence of evidence with regard to life after death means that belief about personal immortality is a matter for each individual to decide on the basis of which kind of belief one finds most satisfying. James was very interested in conversion and mystical experiences. Those who never have had such experiences, he called once born, while those who had gone from the depths of sin or despair to the heights of a close relationship with spiritual reality, he calls twice born. In fact, that's what the varieties of religious experience is about the conversion experiences that he's gathered from all over the world. He viewed this renewal resulting from the conversion or mystical experience as the core of religious experience. He said that from a scientific point of view, such life-changing experiences could be understood as an invasion from the subconscious into one's conscious life. So there you see his scientific side saying, here's a scientific explanation for these religious experiences. It's the invasion from the subconscious into the conscious. For James, it was the feeling tone and the kind of behavior that were the essence of religion, while the intellectual beliefs were just the trimming. In his concluding chapter of Varieties of Religious Experience, he says, quote, when we survey the whole field of religion, we find a great variety in the thoughts that have prevailed there. But the feeling on the one hand and the conduct on the other are almost always the same. For Stoic, Christian, and Buddhist saints are practically indistinguishable in their lives. The theories which religion generates, being thus variable, are secondary. And if you wish to grasp the essence of religion, you must look to the feelings and the conduct as being the more constant elements. End of quote. For James, in its intellectual content, religion at its minimum can be boiled down to this. One, there is an uneasiness about us, a sense that there is something wrong about us as we naturally stand. And two, the solution to this uneasiness is a sense that we are saved from the wrongness by making the proper connection with the higher powers. Any additional intellectual content beyond this constitutes what James called overbeliefs. They are the trimmings of religion, not what is essential to it. I have noted how some of the ideas of William James about religion are appealing to some Unitarian Universalists, especially his view that not everyone has to have the same ideas in the area of religion. At the same time, I feel obliged to note that some Unitarian Universalists, like myself, are in strong disagreement with some of his ideas. For example, although James may be right about the fact that traditional religion has appealed to individuals by making each of them feel personally important in the big scheme of things, I do not agree that that is what religion should do. It seems to me that religion should help individuals to see the big scheme of things and what role they can play in it without making them the main thing that matters. I also think that James's view on the relation between determinism and free will is very wrong-headed, because being a free and morally responsible person is a very different thing and even contrary from behaving in an unpredictable way. Might subatomic particles have free will because we cannot predict where they will go? That just doesn't seem to me what we mean by freedom. And incidentally, I will be conducting a forum on this in 2 weeks on this very issue of freedom and determinism. That's at 9:30. I also think that it is a mistake to define religion basically in terms of the conversion experiences of some individuals. Since James himself says that once born individuals can be religious, it seems inappropriate to me to think that the very essence of religion is revealed only in the experiences of these twice born persons with the conversion experience. But my aim today has not been to convince you of the rightness or wrongness of William James' own views about religious philosophy, but rather to inform you about what his views are, and hope that you find some of them useful in the development of your own thinking about religious philosophy.